Of course, with a good snow cover over much of the state and Arctic temperatures either here in some parts of the state or on the way in others, there's really not much you can do out in the garden or much that you'd want to do out in the garden, as a matter of fact. But that means it's a perfect time to think about and plan for next year's garden. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. The seed catalogs that you're probably getting are really a kind of a nice treat, aren't they, right about this time of the year? But like anything, it makes sense to have a plan in place to use them well, and Barb Larson can help us with that. She's a horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. She has a wealth of information to share, been a guest on our program many times. Always happy to have her join us. Barb, thank you again for spending time with us today.
I'm delighted to be back. Well, for the last Garden Talk of 2013. Wow.
That's exactly right. And we got plenty we can talk about. You know, winter officially started, actually just officially, last week.
Yep.
But a lot of gardeners already anxious and eager for spring to roll around. And lucky for us, this is when the seed catalogs start showing up. Certainly, they've been showing up in my mailbox.
I've had a few. Mm-hmm. What I've found, though, I think now with the internet, I don't get as many as I used to.
Yeah,
so now I'm having to use the internet more to do searches and some of those kinds of things, which is fine. You can get as much or more information, or quite often, I will even look at the paper seed catalogs and then go to their internet sites and do a little further research and everything, too.
Yeah, so that's part of the game plan.
Yeah, it is. I think, and I think it's also a great way where you can find out some new and unusual things that you may not get catalogs for, or maybe you used to, and you go, why aren't I getting that catalog from that really interesting place anymore? And you know, just do a search on it, and you can usually find it and pull it up and find out what they're doing this year. So.
And all those vegetables, those interesting varieties of vegetables and flowers. Boy, they can be tempting. Any advice on how to make sure you order what you really want and not a whole lot more?
Well, that's a whole lot more. That's the tricky part. So first of all, I always recommend that everybody try something new, at least one new thing every year.
Yep.
And if you're, especially for novice gardeners, the All America selections is always a good choice because those have been tested. This year, All American selections have done something a little bit different. They've actually added regions to their testing, so you can even look at which ones may be something that are good for the Great Lakes or the Midwest rather than something out of the South or East, so you can even target it a little bit more. So I always look for something new, at least one thing, and then, you know, what are the old favorites to kind of even compare, you know, against with those things too.
So I like the idea of trying something new.
Yeah.
And just, it's a good way to go. And I think sharing, swapping ideas, and swapping seeds.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah. And there are online seed exchanges now. So you could even look for that. If you do something like an online seed exchange, I would really be careful, kind of do a little research to make sure that it's gardener to gardener, but you want to make sure that whoever you're swapping with, they're taking care of their seeds correctly, and you're not bringing in any seed-borne diseases or anything like that. But it's a good way, and especially for the heirlooms, which I talked about trying something new. When I talk about trying something new, try something new to your garden.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't have to be new, but sometimes an heirloom plant may be new to your garden, and you want to compare that to something that you've been using a long time.
What about now? I get this question a lot. I've got some seed that's 2 years old or three years old. How many years are seeds generally viable?
It really depends on the kind of seed. So sometimes there are seeds that will last, in some cases, thousands of years. I have a daughter who's an archaeologist, and she tells me about they open these jars in the Mideast, and there's seeds in there, and they're viable. But there are some seeds that'll last only a couple of years. So remember that old seed germination test is, you know, put like 5 or 10 in a damp paper towel, roll it up and see if they swell and they start to sprout. And then that can give you kind of the percentage. And I always look at, I have to have like 75% starting to germinate or otherwise throw them out and start something new. Unless it's back to that heirloom that you're trying to keep. So
I have a caller, or I have someone on email. John has an email for us, and he emailed us at talk@WPR.org, and you can do that too if you want to, or you can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, post a question, comment, or a garden photo. We'd love that as well. But the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Our email from John. John says, I bought a home 5 years ago that has blackberries surrounding the yard. First couple of years, the blackberries were very abundant. In the last 2 years, seems there are hardly any berries and even fewer vines. I have not done anything to the bushes. What do I need to get to do in order to get more berries my kids can enjoy?
Okay. Well, the first thing is just to check, is it blackberries? And we don't have John, so we don't know. Is it blackberries or is it black raspberries?
Yeah.
So blackberries are really borderline hardy in Wisconsin. Those of us in, again, where I work in Kenosha and along the southern tier can usually get away with blackberries, in especially in some protected locations, some of the really hardy ones. So it's possible that they may just not be surviving. They're kind of dying out because they're not getting through the winter times. If they're black raspberries, which means they're just like a red raspberry, only they're that dark purple color, those are hardy. But sometimes they're, especially the ones that are more wild, tend to be really prone to a lot of viruses. And so they may just be dying out from some viruses. You may also want to do some pruning, cut out all those old canes and see if the new stuff will resprout, if you can get new growth on it.
Very good tips there. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You know, you are such a wealth of information, and I think every county we've got, pretty much, we've got an extension horticulture.
Well, we certainly have either an agriculture person. Yeah. In the urban counties, we have horticulture educators or agents. So,
and how do you get a hold of them?
Well, I think the best way is to just Google Wisconsin Extension, or even better, your county. But all of us have, it's really simple. All the county extension offices, our websites are the county name and then .uwex.edu. So mine is kenosha.uwex.edu. Same thing for any county in the state. It would be that. And it will link to the main extension page. And quite often we'll have information on gardening there too.
And you know, there are the UW Extension Learning Store, those publications, I think those are a great resource.
Excellent.
To keep in mind.
And we've got a lot of new ones out, especially there's been a lot of effort in the last year or two to put out what's called the People and Plants series, which is the new one that's about community gardening. But don't think it's only about community garden or that you have to be a community gardener to use that information.
No.
So there's lots about, you know, checking your soil, knowing whether or not that's a good soil for a vegetable or a community garden. It goes on through what are the advantages of gardening. So there's one on that. I believe there's one on, I know there's one on good vegetables to grow in community gardens. But you can also, those are good vegetables to grow in any of our gardens in Wisconsin. So lots of information. That's the new stuff. But we also have lots of good, what I would say, good, reliable information that's been there, too.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I think that's a great way. And that's a good resource, I always think, when we're starting out this time of year to consider when you're thinking about what do you want to grow for the coming year, and it's not just seeds, but what other kinds of plants do you want to grow? Go and check out some of those resources and see what some of the recommendations are.
Catherine in Wabasha, Minnesota has a question. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Great. So we listen to you guys often. I just wanted to tell you a little story. It's not exactly related, but it's related to one of the things that was discussed yesterday with the guy with the calendar.
Yes.
And you talked about phases of the moon and
yes.
that sort of thing with the fauna.
Phenology calendar.
Phenology.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. And I moved from central Minnesota, where my grandmother was quite a gardener, to Trempealeau County in western Wisconsin in 1970. And so I asked my grandmother if she had any advice for gardening, and she said, sure, plant by the moon and buy gurney seeds or forget it. I just wanted to share that with you. It really does, I think, you know, using the Farmer's Almanac or whatever you can get your hands on, it really does help to plant by the moon. And some of my farmer neighbors would even plant, quote, their fence posts by the moon.
Oh, that's a new one.
Well, I don't know about the fence post, but what about the rest of it, Barb?
Well, this is one of those that many people have thought planting by the moon. And there's certain ones you plant in the waxing moon and sun that you plant in the waning moon. And you can look it up in the Art Farmer's Almanac and everything. And if it works for you, that's great. It's not been proven by research, though. So, you know, there's a lot of these kinds of things. Yes, there are things that we know with phenology. I'm sorry I didn't hear your guest yesterday, but we know things like tracking when to expect insects, scouting for insects. That's really quite effective for that. And there are other things, but some of the planting stuff, probably not. But again, you know, that's in that if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, another thing that I thought about when I was listening yesterday, which was very interesting, and I don't mean to impose upon you guys, but when we lived in Botswana, the whole traditional chieftainship and, you know, the tribal council.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the medicine men and, you know, the folklorists would have these huge, is it phrenology? No, that's your brain thing. What is it called again?
Phenology.
Phenology.
Yeah, okay. They would decide for the whole tribe when to plant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
And in some ways, Barb does that too.
I tell everybody when to plant. Yeah, I tell everybody that. I don't know if they listen to me or not.
You're the tribal leader for your county. But, you know, in some ways, you're giving advice on when to plant.
Sure. Yep. And especially some of them, I would think some of the, you know, medicine men or the shamans or whatever, a lot of them with some of their medicines, a lot of those were herbal. And so many times I think they studied the, you know, the phases and the environment and the seasons and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Thanks, Catherine. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Suval, our on-air producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with UW Extension horticulture agent and expert Barb Larson with Kenosha County. And you can join in if you have a question for her about your garden or about seed catalogs or seeds, or how do you plan your attack when those catalogs start showing up. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. Jane emailed us and wondered if you have suggestions for good catalogs for perennial seeds. A lot of the catalogs include perennials, but there is not a very wide selection.
There are some companies that specialize more in flower seeds, including perennial seeds, so I would look for some of those. And one that, and I'm not endorsing this one, but Thompson Morgan is one, so you may want to search for that, or just search for perennial flower seeds. A lot of people don't like to do the flowers because they're sometimes a little trickier, or it takes longer for them to go to seed to when they get big enough to bloom. And many people would much rather start with the transplants instead. So that's why. But yes, they are available out there. You may have the challenge maybe more getting them in small quantities, because even commercial or wholesale companies, quite often you can purchase or can get these from, but there tend to be bigger quantities of seed. So if you only want a few, which most of us do, that may be a little more challenging. But I would look around, do a little searches on it. And if you have question, if you know, if you can't find it, email me and I can do some additional research or find out some of my stuff too.
Darlene in Tomahawk, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I have a question. I'm more or less in zone 3 west of Tomahawk.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, instead of planting seeds from scratch, starting in the house or out in the garden because of the short season I have, I bought pre-planted spaghetti squash plants, 10 of them, and 10 of the butternut squash. I planted them about 10 feet apart from one another. My spaghetti squash, I got probably a dozen fruit, and my butternut squash, I got one that grew as far as 5 inches, and that's it. Lots of blossoms, but that's all, out of 10 plants.
Okay.
Why?
And by any chance, did you happen to look to see whether or not the butternut was producing female flowers, or were you getting mostly male flowers?
I believe it was mostly male, but how can you tell when they're only 3 inches tall?
Well, you can't. The way you tell, and for listeners that may not know, members of the squash family, so the squashes and the pumpkins and cucumbers, most of those are, they're separate male and female flowers. And the way to tell the difference is the male flowers, the stem is, if you look from the vine up to where the stem goes on into the flower, so the petals, it's straight. On a female, you will actually see a little miniature fruit on that stem, on the basically on the flower stem, part of the stem. So that's way, then you don't have to look for the actual plant parts.
Right.
That's an easy, quick way to kind of tell. So it could be the weather conditions that you had. Sometimes if the temperatures aren't quite right, you may get more males than females. And it could be that the spaghetti squash variety you had was not quite as sensitive to that as the butternut variety. It could also have something to do with the length of the growing season. So particularly where you are, where you have that short growing season, any of us in Wisconsin, we really need to look at the variety or the cultivar that we're choosing and look for ones that have a fairly short period between seed and fruit production, or between production of the squashes. And that's true of anything that we grow in Wisconsin. We need to have enough days in there to make sure we produce it. So that's the other thing that may have happened, was that you had a spaghetti squash that had a shorter period of time from seed to production, rather than, and the butternut may have had a longer time.
Yeah.
So it could be either or both.
There you go, Darlene. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Peggy in Grantsburg a chance to join in. Peggy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering about acorn squash seeds. I had some acorn squash this fall, and when I was having the third one, I thought, well, I should just save these seeds and try and plant them next year. So, you know, I dried them, and then, or I cleaned them and dried them, and then I put them out in the unheated porch because I thought perhaps they have to go through a cold period. Now, is that true, or?
No, they don't.
No. So they won't be productive next year?
Well, who knows? You'll have to kind of wait and see. It may have to depend on how cold they got. We generally want to store all of the seeds in kind of a cool, dry condition.
Okay.
So as long as they didn't get really cold, you know, you still may be okay. Those might be a good one to do the germination test on that we talked about first.
Okay.
Or just plant them a little thickly, plant a few more extra in there, or start some indoors to begin with, and don't just count on those. The other thing that concerns me is that because these are squash seeds, they could have crossed with another squash in your garden if you grew another type of squash in the garden. Or even if your neighbor had another kind of squash or pumpkin and they were within bee range. So you know, bees pollinate those. So you could get something really weird and not exactly your acorn squash from these seeds.
Well, it'd be a good experiment.
So, and we're back to this is kind of the fun in gardening. See what happens.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Peggy, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. We have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. John in Richland, it is your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I tried three times to get a rose plant growing, and they all died on me.
From how are you starting them? Are you starting them from seed? Are you starting from cuttings? Are you buying plants?
I bought a plant from the landscape center.
Okay.
It had a big ball of roots on it, and I stuck it in the ground, and I watered it and all that. But
and did it start growing at all, or did it just not make it through the winter? Or
it did make it through the winter is what it was,
It did not make it through the winter.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So a couple of things are, especially if it's a hybrid tea or a floribunda, which are grafted roses, those you really need to usually I start in mid to late November, and I start covering what's called the graft union. So piling up either soil from another part of the garden and cover it usually about 6 to 12 inches with soil. And then over the top of that, then I'll add either fluffy leaves or straw or something like that to help insulate that crown, that graft area. If you are instead, if you don't want to go through all that muxin, there are a lot of really nice landscape roses, or what are called landscape roses, and they're on their own root system. So even if the tops die back, they'll quite often come back from the roots, and they're hardier. So I would look for something. Richland, you should definitely, you'd probably be okay as zone 5, but I'd look for some of the ones that are labeled for zone 4. And then look for some that are listed as on their own roots.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. More callers online. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Ann in Green Bay next. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for your program. This is my first time after many years to try a garden again, and as I'm older, I'm thinking about doing the hay bale or straw bale gardening. I'm wondering where the resources would be that I could get some more information about that.
Well, I was going to say Larry's done it.
Yeah.
I know there's information on the internet. I know there's at least one or two books on it that you probably could get from the library. We don't have an extension information on it.
The straw bale, it's fun. I just tried it last year for the first time and used just one straw bale and just to see how it worked. And I had great success with tomatoes, in particular tomato plants and eggplant.
Yeah. Be aware there is a lot of input into it.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to put a lot of fertilizer because you've got to get it decomposing because that's how the plants can grow in it. So it's not one of those things that's particularly, I don't know that it's easier than containers or any of the other kinds of things. It's just a different style of gardening.
Lasagna gardening is another
True.
Another type of gardening that you may want to look at too. You can do it in small places. of spaces. And so I would go online. There's a good book on straw bale gardening, and I'm forgetting the author. I had him on my show.
Yeah.
And we had a wonderful time talking about it, which is why I tried it, because I really liked it. It was a lot of fun. But straw bale gardening is the title of the book. And then I would also look for lasagna gardening and just how to do it.
Yeah. And that's where you layer the usually newspapers and straw and compost and those kinds of things. So yeah. I don't know how big and where you're looking at gardening again. That would make a difference.
Yep.
Yeah. I appreciate your information.
Yeah. So lasagna or straw bale.
Straw bale. Mm-hmm.
Both online. You'll find great information. Mitch in Washburn, it's your turn. Hi, Mitch.
Hello there.
What can we do for you?
Yeah.
I've got a question. I have tried ground cherries for the first time. I found some at a farmer's market, and I'm wondering if that is something easy to grow in northern Wisconsin.
I can't tell you much.
They're
in the tomato family, so I don't know what this is another one of those that I don't know what the length of time is between, you know, seed or transplant in to the time when you'd get production. If you got them at a farmer's market up in that area, my guess is that it's short enough growing season that you might be able to try it. But you may want to, in fact, I would recommend you start them indoors so that you move as transplants outside rather than starting them from seed outdoors. And otherwise, if you called me at my office, I'd have to say, I'll look that up and get back to you. If you want, you can email me and I can get back to you. But up in Washburn County, you've actually, up in that area, there's a couple of great people that can help you with horticulture questions up there. Jane Acklam and Kevin Sheshow are up in that Washburn Burnett area.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Thank you for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Lisa in River Falls. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Earlier this fall, I dug up some iris bulbs that I had and separated them, and I didn't get them all back in the ground. I have about a third of them left. And I'm just wondering, what can I do? I have beautiful irises typically. I'm wondering, what can I do to make sure these bulbs will still work for me come spring?
Well, I think the main thing right now is you just want to keep them in a cool place. You may want to make sure that they stay. You don't want them to shrivel. So this is always tricky. Some people will store rhizomes and tubers and bulbs, you know, the cannas and dahlias and all those things. Some people store it in sawdust. Some people do it in just barely moist peat moss or sphagnum. Some people just do them in paper bags and have luck with it that way. So a lot of it depends on the environment you're putting them in, what your basement is like, what your, you know, cold cellar, or for the few of us that have something like that, and I don't. Or even, you know, if you have a garage right up next to the house, but I wouldn't want them to go below about 40 degrees. So keep them from freezing, because most of these bulbs and tubers and things, the iris, probably you could go down close to freezing because they go into freezing outdoors. That would be fine. But keep them cool, prevent them from completely shriveling up. So you may even need to mist them once in a while and then check them. You don't want to store anything that's not in perfect condition, because if it's damaged, it will produce ethylene gas, and that will actually cause the other things around it to start to rot or actually deteriorate in other ways. So try different ways and see what happens.
There you go.
And then when about replanting them?
Well, I would plant them.
I
would probably do, let's see, River Falls, early to mid-May. You know, once the ground, it wouldn't have to be really warm because they're hardy for you. You normally have them outdoors, but I'd want the soil to start warming up a little bit.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. And Alan Eau Claire, hi to you.
Hi, I just wanted to say that ground cherries are really easy to grow here. We had half a dozen plants last summer, and they produced dramatically. They're pretty low growing and spread wide, so you got to give them some space, and they're easy to container grow or whatever.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there a particular variety that you tried that you liked? Or
you know, just the one we actually bought plants in a local nursery.
Okay.
And so it's the one they offer, but there is a difference in varieties.
Yep.
There's a wild growing ground cherry here, which does not produce edible fruit. I believe that the one that they sell is a Polish variety.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Cause there are some weeds that are in that same family that are commonly called ground cherry.
There are actually ground cherries. There's also obviously nightshades, which don't look that differently. And I believe Japanese lanterns can naturalize pretty easily and tend to get out of hand.
Yep, they can. So there's all sorts of.
They're delicious, though, and they're very easy to grow. The important thing to know is that you're best off actually not picking them off the plant, but rather letting them fall to the ground.
Okay.
Their husks become sort of paper white brown, a light brown. They fall on the ground, and that's when they're ripe. They're a nice amber. Otherwise, their flavor's a little funky.
Okay, good tip.
Thanks, Al.
But once they're ripe, they taste like candy.
I like that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Yep.
We will do that. Al, thank you very much for calling and for that advice.
You know, it's fun. There's so many new people are trying new vegetables and fruits and all these things that most of us have never grown before or people grew, you know, 100 years ago that all of a sudden they're trying again. So.
Well, John in Middleton apparently tries something a little unusual. Let's see what John's got here. Hi, John.
Hi. I used to play practical jokes on people by grafting different things to trees. For example, I grafted four different types of apples onto my sickle pear tree. At my next house, I grafted peaches to a wild plum.
Yep.
And at my last house, I grafted a golden delicious to a little crab apple tree.
You are devious.
You're a good grafting is tricky.
That
you're doing it, but you're also very smart about it because you were also grafting within that same genus. So you're because otherwise you can't do a peach on an apple tree.
Right, you go seeds to seeds and stones to stones.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
But you do have to be pretty good. You must be really good at grafting.
About 20% success rate.
That's not too bad.
That's not bad. Not bad. I was trying to remember the book. Is it Michael Durr?
The book
on grafting.
Yeah, I don't remember who
it is. It's not the Durr book.
No, I don't think so. But there are a lot of grafting books. But grafting is one of those where I tell people this is the art of horticulture. Yeah. Yes, there's science to grafting, but there's a real art to be able to do that successfully.
The other thing I've done is for 40 years, I've been recycling my marigold seeds. And I harvest the seeds by color, but the next year you never get exactly what you thought you were going to get.
No.
Well, as long as you know that, that's the fun part.
That's the fun, and they're always beautiful. It's just they never look like they did before.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Oh, boy. Doug and Trevor, there's a real good experimental gardener there.
Yep.
Doug and Trevor, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hello. My question is on the strawberries. I started it a couple years ago, and my understanding is the production will go down, and then you want to replace them with new strawberries. Well, the strawberries I got going, you know how they are. They're always sending out daughters, you know, shoots, whatever, for new plants. Now, if I separate them from a mother plant, would that be considered a brand new strawberry and start with 100% production, or would it carry over from the mother plant and be the low production?
No, no. That's where you want to redo your strawberries periodically. And you're right, if I remember off the top of my head, is it about every 3 years? And when you're renovating your strawberry patch, part of it is that you're getting rid of the original mother plants so that the daughter plants can grow. And this is one where we do have an excellent publication on the Learning Store, and it's Growing Strawberries in Wisconsin. And it talks, there's a whole section in there about renovating your strawberry patch. So I definitely look that up. Go to the Learning Store .uwex.edu and look under Growing Strawberries. You can pull that up and you can read the whole brochure, the whole booklet right online.
Okay, well, I'm doing raised beds, and I had my first raised bed with the strawberries in there, and then I built another raised bed, and I cut the daughters off of mothers, and I put those in the new raised bed.
Okay.
Good call, or should I have bought brand new strawberries?
No, that's fine. As long as you didn't have disease problems in the daughter strawberries, then you're fine. You just made
all
it,
right.
In some ways, maybe that's more work, but that's okay. That works, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, all right.
Thanks a lot for calling. And again, you can join us. We have an open line to get you on really quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Question about your seeds or your garden vegetables, something that happened last year you wonder about? Or do you have some thoughts about, or maybe some questions about what to plant and how to plant in the coming year? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. As Sue called in to say on ground cherries, by the way, she says ground cherries grow easily in her area, which is Oconto, Wisconsin. She just sticks them in the ground and give them a little water, and they taste great.
Sounds good. Well, I guess we'll all have to try ground cherries now, right?
Yeah, Now I'm thinking about ground cherries. I'm not even sure what they taste like.
No, I've seen them, but I've never grown them or used them or anything like that. You know, a lot of people use tomatillos, which are very similar also, and they even reseed and almost grow wild in the garden. So, yeah, sounds good.
Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. And we're having lots of fun talking about what's going on in the flower garden and actually a lot on the vegetables.
A lot of vegetable questions today. So,
but flowers are more than welcome.
Flowers, trees, shrubs.
Yes, any of those.
all of the above.
Chad in Decorah, Iowa. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, let's stick with the vegetables, I guess.
Okay.
I got a question about Brussels sprouts. I grew them for about 5 years, and the first couple of years I did pretty good. These last couple of years, they just seem to leaf out. I don't get many edible sprouts off them. I was wondering if I'm doing something wrong. Too much nitrogen, too little, wrong varieties, weather conditions.
Probably.
Everything varies so much.
Well, 2 years ago, it could have been the hot, dry that would have done it because they tend to like cooler conditions. But this past year, we weren't too bad. Too much nitrogen might be a problem with it. I'm assuming you're growing it exactly the way you did the previous years when they grew all right.
Yeah.
You're planting them at the same time. Okay. Are you rotating? Are you moving them to different parts of the garden?
Yeah. So I was wondering if that might be a problem. I always thought that should be a good thing, but it seems like since that first couple of years, I kept those in the same area, and this time I moved them, and I having a hard time.
Well, usually we do recommend that you move things. Now, the only thing is if you move them into some place where they get a lot of shade or if you're near something like a black walnut tree, which would be a real problem for anything that you're trying to grow. So otherwise, I don't know why this past year you didn't have really good production on them if you're doing everything the same. Try them again. Move them in different place. If you've had them there a couple of years and not had good production, move them someplace else coming up and continue on and see what happens.
Yep.
Is there a better variety for our area?
You know, what is it? Jade Cross, I think, that's been used for years and years and years. And as far as I know, that's still pretty good. That's a good one. It's been around, you know, kind of test of time. If you want, this is one where we talked about earlier, try that one. And then if you can find a newer variety or a different one, try that. You know, grow them next to each other and see which works better.
Yep.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Yeah, thanks, good luck with them.
Mike and Osseo. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about raspberry plants. I got some raspberry sets from a friend's raspberry patch.
Okay.
It did great the first year, and then now they're not producing anything anymore.
So,
but you had mentioned, just for the previous caller, black walnuts. I do have them planted by a dead black walnut tree.
By a dead black walnut tree.
Even dead, though.
Yeah. It takes a while for the juglone, which is the chemical that the black walnuts produce, to degrade in the soil. So if the first year they did okay, and then after that they kind of pooped out, it could still be that. Yeah, that's probably the juglone that's still left from the black walnut tree. And even if there's nuts, or if you have a lot of black walnuts in the area and you have squirrels coming in and putting the black walnut nuts in the ground around it, that even can cause problems, too. Mm-hmm. So you may want to get new starts and try to plant them away from, make sure you're a pretty good distance away from that old black walnut.
Or a raised bed with something to keep the roots from... Well, if it's dead,
it wouldn't be a problem. Yeah,
but a raised bed might be a way to do it with all new soil.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'll try that.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. And speaking of height, Dave in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a quick question. I just moved into downtown Madison last August. It's got a condo there, and I'm on the 10th floor of my building. I had some plants out on my balcony, and I never noticed any bugs or anything on them, you know, and if I was going to try to plant vegetables this year, and I didn't know, is there a height limit that, like, you know, you can get bees and stuff up there to pollinate? Am I too high? Or it never occurred to me until I was noticing that.
I would think bees would fly up that high. I can't see that would be a problem. Now, they may not be, if you're the only one that's planting a few containers of squash or something, I'm trying to think squash probably wouldn't, but where you have to have something that's bee pollinated, it could be that they won't find it because there's just nothing else around. Because even in gardens that are, you know, backyard gardens, we're always encouraging people to have a diversity of plants and different things in bloom so that the pollinators will come there. So it could just be isolation if that's it. But height wouldn't have anything to do with
it. No, we have on the UW-Madison campus, there's a hive and one of the buildings on it's the top floor. So it'd be the seventh floor. Okay. And the bees...
Yeah,
I mean, the hive happens to be right outside a meeting room, and so it's, in a way, it's terrible because you sit and watch. You know, you're in a meeting, and it's very tempting to sit and watch those bees come and go.
One of the other things
I was wondering is that I left my balcony door open in the summertime there. Accidentally, and I was pleasantly surprised that I didn't get any mosquitoes that came inside. And I was just, you know, I was wondering if there was an elevation thing, but it doesn't.
No.
You might get a little more wind, and
lucky mosquitoes don't like me.
They're terrible flyers. So yeah. They don't do well in wind. So you probably have more wind up there.
Yeah, could be. So, and as long as with a balcony that, you know, you take into account how much light you're getting. So
it has a great southern exposure.
Perfect. Yep. So
perfect.
Have fun. Well, grow whatever you want. Try it. Let us know.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. I was just thinking about those On our patio, we always often use a fan. If we've yeah. mosquitoes are bad, we just put a fan out, and they can't.
Yeah, it's only, what, 10? I was trying to remember what Phil Pelletieri says, 10, 15 miles an hour if you have a... So any yeah. little breeze, they can't fly in.
They don't fly well. Janet in Oak Creek, I believe.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you for calling.
I have a question regarding... I live in Oak Creek, and I have a very wet area of my yard that there's standing water in early spring, sometimes going into... summer, and then again in fall. So I'm looking for a shrub or tree, something ornamental and or good for wildlife that maybe doesn't get really, really large. Any suggestions there? And one more comment about ground cherries, they self-seed. So if you let them, leave a few on the ground, you'll get volunteers.
Kind of like those tomatillos that self-seed all over the place, yeah. Okay, so there's lots of options for your wet soils. I would particularly, especially since you mentioned that you really would like them wildlife friendly, I would look for some of the native plants and the native shrubs or even trees that would go well in wet areas. The couple of things. One is figure out what the kind of mature size you want is. So how much space do you really have for it in there? So if you're looking at, you know, I've only got 25 feet in height or only 10 feet wide, it's going to limit what you're going to put in there. But so there's lots of different things. The other thing I would look at is what is your soil pH? So obviously we can't do it now. It's the middle of winter and the ground's frozen, but I would think a soil test would be very important. Many of our wetland plants like a little more acidic soils. So as long as the soil, once you know the soil pH, then you can go with what's wetland. What popped into my head right away were things like some of the alders, which like wet soils. That's a shrub, or there are also tree form ones. In my backyard, and this gets big, and it's a tree, it's not a shrub, I put in bald cypress, and it really likes that wet. Wet areas. So there you have lots of different options. By the way, bald cypress isn't really native, but anyway, but it will grow here. So I think you have lots of things. Some of the dogwoods like wet soils. So I was just trying to think off the top of my head. Meadowsweet, button bushes like wet soils as long as it's acidic enough. So I think you have options there.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks, Janet. Eric in Endeavor, hello.
Hey, Larry. Hey, I have a comment more than a question. You know, I have about a half a dozen mature black walnut trees in my backyard. My entire yard is covered with walnuts, you know, when they fall. And I'm surrounded by that, by pine trees. And our garden grows great. We grow tomatoes and cucumbers and melons and peppers and everything. And I'm wondering if my only theory is just because I didn't know about the black walnuts when I planted my garden or why is my garden growing so well when all these other gardeners can't grow anything around me that don't have all those?
Are you sure they're black walnuts?
Oh, I'm 100% sure they're black walnuts.
Okay. Endeavor, sandy soil.
Sandy and some clay mixed in. Well, it's 75% sand and the rest is clay.
Yeah, because what happens is juglone tends to, which is produced by the black walnuts, tends to hang around a little bit longer in heavier clay soils. So with sandy soils, it tends to it still can be a problem. I'm not saying it's not at all, but tends to sometimes in some areas may not be as big a problem. What I've also seen, and I don't know how many black walnuts you have, is I've seen gardens or backyards where you can actually tell where the roots are for the black walnuts. Because I've seen where there's a whole garden full of plants and things grow fine, they're normal height, and then they're stunted, and then the next one is normal height, and then you go a little bit farther on and they're stunted. And those stunted areas, if you dig down, that's where there's black walnut roots fairly close. It doesn't mean the entire thing is a problem, but it tends to be sporadic. And there are things that grow in and around black walnuts just fine. Now, tomatoes, if you mentioned you had tomatoes, that's the surprising ones because they're very sensitive.
Really sensitive.
So you may just have lucked out.
Yeah. I had my wife, I said, take some dirt and put it in this old basin sink we had. I said, so we separated after I found out about that. And after those tomatoes were just bursting the seams, I said, where did you get that soil? And she goes, oh, over there under the big black walnut tree. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
She must have lucked out and got a spot where there wasn't a lot of jug loan in there.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Eric. And Jolie in Mosinee. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I'm calling about with pampas grass. My sister and I have pampas grass, which is very pretty. And my son has it down in Winona, Minnesota, too. Very pretty, but it just is spreading.
Oh, and how do you
get rid of it?
Yeah.
You're probably going to you have to use one of the herbicides, and you want to use it as it's starting to grow in spring. So it's got to be an active growth. If that doesn't do it, a lot of the perennial plants, the best way to get rid of them is to treat them with an herbicide in the fall. So because then it sucks down the herbicide as into the root system better at that time of year. So I would look at those kinds of things. It's got to be when the plant's actively growing, though.
Are there herbicides that
are specific for that? Well, it's in the grass family, so you have to, you'd have to stick with something that's going to kill grasses. So things like 2,4-D that kill dandelions won't work because that's why your grass lives when you treat your dandelions. So certainly glyphosate, Roundup, and those kind of products might work. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to find anything short of digging it up. And that's one of those things, you leave any little piece, it's going to come back on you. So the other is some people have had luck with doing things like trying to suffocate it. So putting like plastic over that area and most of a growing season. So if you don't want to use an herbicide, you might try something like that.
Yeah, that's another good thing to give it a shot. And Jolie, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, it's lots of fun on Garden Talk, isn't it? We have our guest today, Barb Larson. Barb is a horticulture educator. She works with the University of Wisconsin Extension in Kenosha County. And we have folks like her in most of the counties in the state, either hort educators or ag educators who double in the hort area. And they always do a wonderful job for us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You know, we can't spend a lot of time gardening right now. Can't do much gardening at this time of the year, but that doesn't mean we can't have a good time talking about how maybe last season went, how to plan for a great 2014 garden. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. And also great to have Barb Larson with us. Barb is the horticulture educator for Kenosha County. Comes by every so often. Always a great treat to have her with us to answer your questions. And if you have flower questions, or we've done a lot of vegetable questions today. You usually deal more with trees and shrubs and flowers.
Well, that's what my background is and kind of maybe more my passion, but I do everything.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah, I was going to say do everything. You know, I work a lot with Patty Nagai, who's the horticulture educator in Racine County, and her background is vegetables. So we say it's perfect. We kind of offset each other, but we both cover everything. So,
well, you're doing a great job today. And I tell you what, Dominique and Zwingle, Iowa, has a question for you, so let's go to Dominique. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I put out hedge apples to keep the spider population down in several rooms, and when they dry out, it looks like there's seeds in there.
There are. That's the fruit of the Osage orange tree.
Okay, can I get a hedge apple tree from those seeds?
Well, I have to tell you, I'll confess. So we were at the break, and we had a little note that, you know, the producer here writes down what they're calling. So I got out my smartphone and I quick looked it up. So you can get, because it is the fruit of the Osage orange tree. Yes, you can get seeds out of it, and it looks like the seeds require a little bit of a cool, moist period. I did find a fact sheet from the University of Georgia Forestry that talked about propagating hedge apples and particularly, actually, I searched on Osage Orange. So you may want to search on Osage Orange and propagation and should be able to find how to do that if
that's
you want to try it
out. That's what a hedge
apple is, right? The hedge apple is the fruit of an Osage Orange.
Yep.
So that's just a different name for it. And yeah, in Iowa, it would grow great. It's, they're native to the plains. They're one of the few trees that actually will grow out in the Great Plains. And they were used, Osage Orange, is a very hard, wood. And so it was used for fence posts, historically. So interesting kind of tree. Now, here's the bad news. You may think that they help with the spiders, but according to Iowa State, because I also did a quick look on that, that they don't. There are chemicals that within that fruit, the hedge apple fruit, that does help to apparently repel cockroaches, but that the fruits itself, the actual hedge apples or the Osage Orange fruit, doesn't help with spiders or anything. But if it, that's back to, if you think it helps,
go ahead.
That's good.
Thanks, Dominique. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We've got open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show as well. Kara posted on Facebook, and well, back to ground cherries. She said, my mom grew ground cherries in our garden when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s. I love them, but haven't been able to find them. Could somebody please tell me where I could find them or post on the Facebook page or call us and let us know?
Yeah. This is another one where I would look at, especially maybe some of the heirloom kinds of places might have something like that. So I can't promise someplace like Seed Savers, but there are other places that have more unusual kinds of vegetables and things. And I know one thing, I'm going to have to try ground cherries this coming
good.
Year.
Yes, my good grief.
That's what you can try in your straw bale is maybe ground cherries.
It'd be worth a try.
Yeah.
Pedro from Fond du Lac called to ask what will grow underneath a pine tree. He has four raised beds in garden, and one of them is unfortunately below a pine tree. Wondering what will survive there, ideally a vegetable.
Well, I'm wondering if the issue is not shade. The pine tree itself, it's the shade. Yeah, because they're pretty dense shade. And most vegetables like at least part to full sun, so vegetables are going to be a little bit iffy. You're probably better off looking for a flower or something that's going to grow in part shade. Some people, sometimes you can get some of the leafy vegetables will grow a little bit better with a little more shade, because they aren't producing a fruit. Mm-hmm. So they don't, usually require quite as much sun. So, try one of those, try some lettuce or something like that, see how they do.
Charlie emailed in response to the pampas grass or pampas grass problem. He said in Florida, where it's rampant, some folks recommend dynamite for removal. Yeah. Trouble with that is then you're spreading it all. I mean,
You would. You'd spread the little pieces everywhere, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea or not. Yeah.
And we actually don't grow pampas grass this far north. It's a type of miscanthus. And there's different kinds, because true pampas grass that he's talking about in Florida isn't hardy this far north.
Good for, and that's a good thing.
Well, I don't know. They're still spreading.
Dale in Prairie du Chien. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have some Honeycrisp apple trees that I got from my dad. My dad's passed away. And I've got other apple trees, too, on our farm. We live out in the country, kind of on a hillside.
Okay.
And we can't get any of the Honeycrisp to produce fruit regularly. Like, we'll have a few apples every year off of them, and they're probably 10-year-old trees, maybe not quite that old.
Okay, so you're getting good flower production.
Decent flower production, not great. Not like some of the other trees that we have.
Okay.
But then there's almost no fruit on them by the fall.
Yeah, are they blooming at the same time as the other trees so that they're getting pollinated well?
I think they're getting pollinated pretty decent, and mostly they are, yeah.
And
they're in kind of two locations, but they're not super far apart either, the trees that we have.
Okay. All right. So I get. So, all right. So, are you seeing small fruits that are developing and then they're dropping, or see, I would just start doing some investigation and just watching them closely to try to figure out, is it a pollination problem? Are they pollinating all right, and then the fruits are not developing correctly? Is it that you're just not getting a lot of flowers to begin with? And, you know, without flowers, you can't have fruits.
Sure.
So I would just start investigating all of those kinds of things. You may also want to do a little research on Honeycrisp. I know they're just a little touchier to grow than some of the other apple varieties.
I've heard that, but when I've tried to do online research, I haven't been real happy with finding what to do or what differences there are.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't, without doing a little more research myself, I can't tell you any specifics.
One of the trees in particular, I noticed the leaves are more like a rusty color sometimes most of the year.
They
look quite like the other trees that we have.
Rusty meaning are they diseased?
The tree looks healthy, but the leaves don't look real green and fresh, I guess.
Okay. Well, you may want to, if the leaves aren't looking quite right, you may want to take some into the extension office and even have them send them into the plant clinic, into Brian Huddleston, and see if you've got disease in there. That might that'll affect the production, too.
Definitely. And he'll have good recommendations.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that sounds great.
Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. And Doty in Mineral Point. Hi.
Hi, it's Doty.
Doty,
all right.
Sorry.
That's okay. I had a question about butternut trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of far off the garden track, but
All right.
No, it's plants.
Years ago, we could go to a grove of butternuts and get the nuts.
Yeah.
And over the years, the grove has died out. And what's up with the demise of butternut
trees?
It's
really a sad thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a disease that's affected butternuts, and they're a native tree and virtually wiped out the butternut populations. We don't hear about that one. I mean, we've heard about chestnut blight and that kind of thing, but there is it's a fungal disease that's killed off the butternuts. And
well, I have two specimens.
Well,
you're lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say, enjoy them.
They don't get very big. The one tree I've been watching for a couple of years gets about 3 inches around, and then it dies. But it sends something from the roots.
Yeah,
and
and
the other one I found probably is about 6 inches around and sparse fruit.
Yeah, and what happens with many of these is it may not completely kill out the tree, but it kills the top, and then it resprouts from the root system. And then after you do that for a long period of time, these plants aren't producing any seed or very limited seed, so the grove eventually dies out and the plants die out. So our friend Dr. Brian Huddleston can tell you a lot more about it, but there's also a lot written on butternut disease, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it is really too bad.
Yep.
The nuts were horrible to crack, but once you got them open, they were divine.
Yeah, I know.
So there is no treatment for
it.
No.
That's
the unfortunate part.
Wow, that is so sad.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I will enjoy them for as long as I can.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, you'll be able to say, you at least experienced and know what butternuts taste like. So
yeah.
Wow.
Thanks, Cody.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Pat in Brown Deer, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. It comes down to the demise of the trees on my lot. I've only been here 3 years, and so far I've called the station and talked, and it was suggested that I cut down a big pine. I did because it was dying. The paper birch, I cut that down. Now I'm in the back of the house, and there are two pear trees I know for sure, and then there's an apple tree. I got one apple off of it in 2 years, and then there's another tree behind it, and behind that is this huge pine again. The gnarly pears that are coming off are not edible. Maybe you get a dozen that are edible. And I wanted to know, is it going to help if I cut down one of the pear trees, this apple tree, and this other pine tree? Will I get decent-looking pears, or should I just leave it to nature?
Pat, did you? Let me ask you one question. You've been in there 2 years. Was this a new house, new construction?
No, okay. This is 1971.
Yeah.
Okay. Little Fork Hill.
So old, established. Probably the fruit trees. Yeah. My guess is the fruit trees haven't really been taken care of. They haven't been pruned. So we have a couple of. I'm going to send you the publications. So back to Learning Store. And there's one on growing pears in Wisconsin, and there's one on growing apples in Wisconsin. And I believe both of them have a little section on they definitely have sections on pruning, but they also, will I think, have sections on pruning old or overgrown ones. So I'd start out with getting them pruned correctly. So whether you do it or whether you hire somebody to do it, you do that. Don't cut down the pear because they need each other to produce them. And your apple, if you don't have another apple nearby that may, or a crab apple nearby, that may be part of the reasons why your apple's not producing. But I first get them pruned, get them cleaned up. Then from there, then you can start looking at what else may be going on with them. Lumpy, bumpy pears could even be, there's things like stony pit. There's different problems with it. But first start by pruning them up and get them healthy, as Larry says, to begin with, and then start to evaluate. And have you found your extension office? Let's see, Brown Deer, you...
It would be the UW.
Yeah, yeah.
Extension on somewhere near the east side, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I would find them. I know in... Are you in Ozaukee County, Milwaukee County?
No, I'm in Milwaukee County, right across the street from Ozaukee County.
Okay, well, go down to the Milwaukee County office, and that they can help you out and help you diagnose that stuff. They have a lot. There's actually a staff person that even works for diagnosing plant problems.
They can even hand over the publications.
Yep, yeah, they could, or they can help you find out where it is and everything. So, go to that Milwaukee County UW Extension.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh, sure.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for calling.
And online, again, at learningstore.uwex.edu. Yeah, easy to find. That's a great, great resource.
Yeah.
Paul in Highland. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, can you tell me if it's too late in the year to treat box elder stumps with an herbicide?
Yeah, nothing's they're pretty dormant, yeah, and it would just wash off and contaminate things, so no, you don't want to treat now.
Okay, thank you.
What is it, 50 degrees, 40?
Well,
above freezing.
Yeah, I you know, you always want to have something kind of actively growing.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's why usually at 50 degrees.
Yeah, most things are actively growing, yeah.
Yep. Scott in Manitowoc. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I had a question about tree grafting.
Sure.
I guess when's the best time to do it and exactly how do you do it? I've looked on the internet a little bit, but just hope for more insight.
Okay, well, most tree grafting and budding, which is a form of grafting, is done in the either late fall or winter time. So usually this is a good time of year to do it. Depends on what you're doing. Some things commercially are even done in the spring as field stock, where they'll do it right out in the fields, or they'll even sometimes do it in fall. But we're looking at this as kind of a, you know, over winter kind of thing, depending on how you're doing it and where you're doing it and that kind of thing. And there are a number of pretty good books on it. So you may want to, rather than the internet, this may be one where you'd be better off trying the library or something like that to find some books on it, rather than just some sources on the internet. The internet would be useful because if you can find some YouTubes where they're demonstrating it,
yes,
that would be really, really helpful. Yeah. And I'm sure there's some of those out there. So, you know, make sure you're looking for something that it's kind of a legitimate source or somebody that's been doing it a lot. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier today, now, grafting, there is a science base in it, but a lot of it's just the art of being able to do it and having the right touch to do it. So, yeah. Also, look at Manitowoc. Look at some of the two-year schools. The may have some plant propagation classes if they have a horticulture department. So you might even want to take a college class at some of the technical colleges if they have a plant prop class.
Yeah, it would be very useful to be able to have somebody show you in person.
Right, and then go in depth and actually practice it and work with it that way.
Yep.
So
thanks, Scott. Lonnie in Richland Center. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to comment about Osage orange trees.
Yeah.
We live near Cincinnati, and we had mature Osage orange trees on our property. They produce hundreds of fruit, which you have to pick up. You can't mow over them.
Yes, that's true.
They have real strong spikes on the branches that flattened our tractor tires and went through our sneakers soles.
Whoa.
So just a word of caution for starting an Osage orange orchard.
Okay, good to know.
Very good to know. Thank you very much, Lena. I'm sorry, Lenny. Linda emailed about ground cherries. Kara was wondering where you can get them. And Jung's Seed Company sells ground cherry seeds. So there's a good source right there. And then we also heard from Margaret. Margaret's on Facebook. She says you can get the seeds from Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. Plants can also be found in some Amish greenhouses in central Wisconsin.
There we go.
And Ben emailed in, it's not too late to treat tree stumps with concentrated Roundup. A fresh cut to the stump is needed.
I still would not recommend it. My concern is if it, even with a fresh cut, if it doesn't soak it in right away, I just want to make sure that I'm not having anything running off anyplace. So
yeah, that you definitely do not want to have. Well, you work with master gardeners, and we talk about master gardeners, but we never have a lot of time to talk in a little bit of depth about it. Tell us about that Master Gardener program. There are programs starting up around the state, I would bet.
There are. And we basically, depending on the county, start either in the fall or in about January.
Yeah.
And so the Master Gardener is a volunteer training program. So the expectation is that you will do volunteer work within the community. It varies from county to county what kind of volunteer work, but it is part of the University of Wisconsin Extension, and our mission is education, so the expectation is that the outreach will be educational kinds of things. So part of it's, you know, demonstration gardens and teaching and working with schools, and sometimes it's even doing therapeutic horticulture and all sorts of things, so there's lots of different options.
And lots of, you wind up with a lot of printed materials and...
You do. And the level one, which is the introductory class, is 36 hours. So most groups meet 12 weeks for 3 hours. And in many places, it's a combination of hands-on and either lecture or discussion. Some parts of the state, they do it as a distance training because we don't have a horticulture educator everywhere.
Yep.
But we're really emphasizing that volunteer component now, that this is just not, it's not a garden club. It's a volunteer training program. And so also there is part of it is a background check to make sure, because we are working with children sometimes and elderly and that kind of thing. And I would say anybody that's interested, contact your county extension office and find out when they're doing training and a little bit more about it.
And if you're in Kenosha County, call Barb Larson.
Call me. We just finished our training, though, for Racine and Kenosha. We wrapped
you're
up for this, but we'll be doing another one. We usually do it every year. So,
Barb, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. What a great show and a great person. She does a wonderful job. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.